Kia ora.
Kia ora. Hello, Jeremy Rose. Here you are in the studio with us.
I am indeed.
In Auckland tonight. Where do you get your news? I realise that you do it for a living, but do you have any favoured sites?
Oh, it's too hard to choose between them. You know, I look at a lot internationally. The one that just pops into my head for some reason is +972. For people that are interested in Israel-Palestine, I'd recommend that as an alternative view.
Did you see that email that John Minto sent out recently?
I think I did.
Yeah, very interesting.
It wasn't.
About the trick, he called it, that Israel penetrates.
Yeah, let's not get into that conversation
now. Get into that because it requires quite a lot more discussion than that. So, yes, news and good news. Is there much good news around? I started off talking about the survey that's been done.
You did. You mentioned the survey of Australians. It was a survey of 38 countries that they take that stuff out of. Unfortunately, we're not one of them, so we can't compare ourselves. But the Australians, as you mentioned, come out. They're among the lowest consumers of news, and they really don't like the amount of negative news. And we were talking about this before, and I mentioned that I've just come across this thing on The Guardian. I think it's been there for a while, called Upside. And it's they describe it as journalism that seeks out answers and solutions, movements and initiatives to address the biggest problems besetting the world.
Positive news.
Yeah. And the one they had this week, which I just really liked, was about the Universo Santi restaurant in the southern Spanish city of Jerez. Employs 20 staff with disabilities of various types. Michelin's been to visit, could be getting a star anytime soon. Just a lovely little story. They had one about kelp farming as a global warming type thing, Yazidi women's cooperative, whole lot of interesting little stories once I went to look.
Where's that again?
That's on The Guardian, and it's called The Upside.
The Upside on The Guardian, right.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And it reminded me of a story I did about 10 years ago about a New Zealand initiative called the Bank of Solutions, which just had lots of interesting initiatives around the country. And strangely, just this week, there's been a similar site launched called Shift Change by a Wellington journalist, Tessa Johnstone. And that is a similar idea. It's only got two stories up at the moment, one about a bicycle workshop in Newtown, Wellington, which is free and helps people build their own bicycles, and another about a community garden, which is a story I think we've heard, but it's a lovely story.
You can get a mindset that the world is a very bad place if all you do is listen to the regular
news. Exactly. I think both reading these types of stories and producing them does us all good now and again.
But community newspapers, they were the ones really that looked at the positive stories, weren't they?
They did. They tended to do more of that. I think there is a thirst for it whenever I do those types of stories. Not for, you know, people seem to enjoy it. A story that really isn't positive is one which hit the screens this week, or at least the video screens, and that's Melanie Reed's NZ's own Taken Generation. She's 2 years ago, she did a story about Oranga Tamariki, that's the updated SIPs with a Māori name, taking a five-year-old off her mother, I think it was, very gruelling to watch. This one's probably even harder. Let's have a listen now.
Everyone knew another day would bring another battle. No one more than midwife Jean Tahuia, she's seen it over and over.
We're always trying to defend a mother or a partner. You know, they've already become victims of circumstance. You know, both of these kids have grown up in homes of family violence. Family violence is the issue here. This young girl has had a baby and she's done nothing wrong. By association, they're saying she's not fit to be a mother.
So it's a long documentary. It's 45 minutes, most of it filmed on cell phones of the family members who are in a hospital room with this young mother, as staff from Oranga Tamariki are trying to uplift the baby because they have a court order. It's an utterly gut-wrenchingly gruelling watch, but I think really important, raises a lot of questions, and it partly just the use of those cell phones is fascinating.
Yeah, how did they get around the privacy issue of that? Has everybody signed off?
Well, the privacy issue is interesting. The staff from Oranga Tamariki in the hospital don't want to be filmed, and they've shown them. In fact, there was a court case. They went today to the family court. Linda Clark, former broadcaster, a partner in Kensington Swan, and as it happens, also a board member of New Zealand On Air, which happens to have funded this very documentary.
Thinking, is that a conflict of interest?
Yeah, I doubt whether it's a conflict of interest as such. It's a governance role, but it certainly feels slightly awkward, I think you could say. They took a case. Their concern was that the baby's identity could be revealed. Newsroom rejected that. The family court declined. I think there is a possibility it will now go to the police to consider. I would recommend that people go and see it. It's obviously a fraught issue, incredibly complicated on both sides. It is, I mean, the damage done when a child is taken from their parents is obviously immense. The damage done when a child isn't taken but something terrible happens is also tragic. So well worth a look. And there's a whole lot of follow-up stories, including one by Aaron Smale about the experience, his experience of being adopted out. And it's well worth a look.
That's on newsroom.co.nz, with Melanie Reed's story.
That's right.
You would have absolutely been following the raids on the ABC in Australia.
Absolutely. And it's still an ongoing story, obviously, and a very interesting one. There was a 30-minute press conference straight after it with the acting commissioner of police, Neil Gohan, I think is how you say his name. And he said something which just really struck me, and it hasn't been picked up that much. Let's have a listen to it.
It's important that people realise the reason why we are so strongly in our view of, or certainly protecting top secret and secret information, is that the Australian government, or particularly the Australian law enforcement and intelligence communities, rely on secret and top secret information from our international partners, particularly Five Eyes partners, to ensure the fact that we keep the Australian community safe. And if we can't be seen, if we can't be seen to protect our own internal information, we are concerned that the information flow to us dries up.
So, I mean, he's saying there that they were so concerned, not by the content, it seems to me that what he's saying is not the content of these secret documents, but the very fact that any secret document could be leaked is this major concern, because it means that other Five Eyes nations won't share the information with them anymore. Now, for those of us that value journalism and freedom of information and public good, I think that is a worrying kind of statement, because just because it's, we know that certain times documents are leaked, which really are in the public interest. And in fact, the man who leaked that was a military lawyer. We're talking about the Afghan papers in this case, military lawyer David McBride. And he was interviewed last week, and he talked a bit about why he leaked it.
It wasn't bad soldiers. It was bad leadership. Changed the rules of engagement to such an extent where they were putting soldiers in harm's way. It made me sick, to the core.
They were pretending to fight terrorism, is what you believe?
Yeah. Everything was done on Instagram terms. They didn't care about whether we actually effectively fought terrorism. All we did was try to put out public opinion that made it look like we were fighting terrorism.
So, yeah, that was David McBride, this former military lawyer, allegedly leaked it, pretty much admitting it there, but they always seem to say that he allegedly is the man that leaked these important documents. Now, there was, I think yesterday, Ida Buttrose, the chair of the ABC, met with the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and he, you know, it seemed like there's progress, people, you know, the government is listening, but he did say that freedom of the press was important, but it wasn't an absolute unconstrained right. He said, it's always been subject to matters like the law of defamation, the law of sub judice, and national security considerations. So it feels to me that he's kind of hammering home that point. And
he is right in the first two, though, isn't
absolutely.
He?
Absolutely. Right. And I think sometimes in the third.
Yes.
New Zealand laws are very different from Australian laws. When I spoke to international lawyers and others about, you know, whether there were implications from what was happening in Australia, they were just saying, look, it's too complicated. We, you know, the laws are very different. But the one thing we do share is a membership of Five Eyes. And I think it's right that we should question whether these same types of pressures are going on. So an unreasonable kind of persecution of whistleblowers seems to be a possibility. That for me was, you know, is something where I'm just surprised that I haven't seen it quoted more, and that military angle hasn't been explored, or the security angle.
I imagine that most Australians, if they're not interested in the news, have gone elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, that is an interesting thing, saying they're not interested in the news, because whenever I'm in Australia, I feel like I am in a much richer media environment. You know, you have the ABC, the daily papers feel much stronger. They've got one, I think, called The Weekly, and it feels like just a much richer SBS. So they're just an ungrateful bunch, those people.
You know. I say most, and that's not accurate, because the stats are there, and you can look at that. That's online, that survey. As you say, it's right around the world, and they were just focusing on the Australian.
Yeah, strangely, New Zealand's not in it. South Africa joined it this year, so maybe we'll be in it next year.
Now, earlier when we were talking about where people get their news from, I mentioned that figure that you gave me of 10,000 subscribers to the Herald paywall so that they can get the stories behind it. I'm amazed that they have 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah, no, and I think it was certainly a very jubilant report on the page today. It wasn't behind the paywall. They were happy for all of us to read that. I had been thinking a bit about the paywall. There was a piece written by their business reporter, Liam Dan, and he was writing about the Reserves Bank's capital ratio proposal.
Oh, yes.
And he was bemoaning the fact that we didn't debate it as much as we should. He said that the banks were probably in a PR putting pressure on, and we should be talking about it more. And he said, you know, it's not like we can't deal with complicated issues. And he used the speed on the roads as an example. He said, look, there's an issue that New Zealand has taken. They debate it seriously. And that's the very issue I'd been thinking of, and the problem of the paywall. If we listen to what you could read or hear outside the paywall now.
And reducing speed on open roads under the guise of some wacky tool is not going to change a thing. We smell an agenda a mile off. This is Julianne Genter and her cronies writ large. And from the bus lanes, the bike lanes, the lack of parking, the reduction of speed, the taxes on petrol, you will note to this point all of it has been unsuccessful. Has the number of cars dropped? No.
So that's the unmistakable voice of Mike Hosking. And you can get that for free.
Yeah, why isn't he behind the paywall? Well, he's all over the place.
Well, if you wanted to get a very well-considered piece by Simon Wilson, which I think was called Six Myths About Road Safety, you have to pay. And that was a very considered article with lots of facts and figures. But one thing he did say is, He wrote this: why is it happening? If the answer was easy, we could fix the problem easily. But it's not. There are lots of reasons. One thing is for sure, though: as we debate the merits of speed limits, better driver education, more enforcement, better road design, safer cars and more, the last thing we need, the very last thing, are people saying, just forget about it. We're fine as we are. We all love cars. And there's nothing we can do. And that's just what two radio hosts are doing, he said. So and behind the paywall, you actually had a response to Mike Hosking, but you have to pay for it.
I've looked at a couple of stories and got through them. Quite interesting. They're really making the headlines very attractive, and the first couple of paragraphs very attractive, and then can't go any further unless you pay.
And so you're not paying?
No. No. Then I just instantly, I don't know what other people do, but I instantly, oh, well, I'll just go elsewhere. You know, I'm not going to pay to read it when there's so many other sources available.
Yeah, well, that is the dilemma, I think, and we'll see what
happens. But 10,000, is that enough to sustain them?
Look, I should know what their... I think it's beyond what their target was. I'm sure it's not enough to sustain. They'll be wanting to grow on that.
All right, Jeremy, well, great to see you in Auckland. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good to have you in person. That's Jeremy Rose with Midweek Media Watch, and he'll be back in a couple of weeks' time.